In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Thursday, April 8th, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for listening. And you will hear in hour number two of the program today a discussion on cybersecurity. My guest live in studio will be Zal Azmi, former Chief Information Officer of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And we'll talk about things that are happening across government in cybersecurity and also specifically at FBI. We'll get Zal's views on some of the things that have happened in the cyber realm since he left government. And that will be about an hour from now that he'll join me on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Unless you've been living under a rock for the past week, you have heard about our HR Reinvented series. A lot of resources about federal HR issues online at federalnewsradio.com. Lots of information on the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Jay Norris, and on the Daily Debrief with Chris and Amy every afternoon, and also on this program. And I must say, I'm kind of proud of myself for the program that I've managed to put together today. I have a discussion on issues that people are facing in the federal government who are trying to get into the federal government. We have talked a lot in the past about problems with the hiring process, problems with retention, problems with recruitment from the perspectives of the people who work at the agencies, the hiring managers, the chief human capital officers, the OPM personnel who are working on these issues. There has not been, in my view, a lot of focus on the issues from the perspective of the people who are trying to get into the federal government or who are trying to manage their careers once they're in, trying to improve their careers and build their careers. And so that is the purpose of our conversation today. And I'm pleased to have three of the biggest names in that area in my studio with me to talk about this. I'm going to start over here on my left and move across. I'm happy to welcome Derek Dortch, who is president of Diversa Group, host of Federal News Radio's Fed Access, and also does some online chats for the Washington Post about federal career issues. Derek, it's great to have you.
Thank you so much, Francis.
We refer to you around the studio off the air as Truth, which we don't need to get into that right now.
Right, we'll talk about it later.
Exactly. Right across from me is Catherine Troutman, founder and president of The Resume Place and author of a number of books on federal HR issues. What's your latest book, Catherine?
Well, the latest book is 10 Steps to a Federal Job, the second edition.
All right, and welcome, and thank you for we were expecting you a little bit later, and I'm glad that you were able to be here for the entire conversation. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
And also happy to welcome Lily Whiteman. She is author of How to Land a Top-Paying Federal Job, a federal career coach, a current federal employee, the only one on our panel today, and contributor to the Federal Times. Great to have you back in the studio. It's been a little while since you've been on the show with me, and nice to have you back.
Thanks for having me back.
Another issue that we spend a lot of time on focus-wise is hiring. Once people get into the government, we don't talk about that as much, it doesn't seem. So I want to save that for a large part of our conversation later on the hour. But, Catherine, I want to start with you. Time after time after time, we hear hiring process and all the problems that are with the hiring process. The reason that I wanted to have the three of you together is because people pay you money to help them, all three of you, pay you money to help them get jobs. When someone comes to you totally green and says, I don't know anything about it, people that I know work for the government, it's great, long-term security benefits, blah, blah, blah. What's the biggest misconception that they have about the concept of getting a job in the federal government?
The biggest misconception is that they usually, when they come to us, they've already been trying to find a federal job, and they've been looking for that with their private industry resume mm-hmm. or whatever resume they might have on their computer, and they don't realize that that resume needs to really focus toward that job and pick up the language from the job. Their resume is just completely, unbelievably not matching where it is they're trying to go.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't realize it until they've been working, trying to apply for a job for 6 months, maybe 100 applications already submitted. And then when they come to us, I show them what a federal resume looks like, and they just can't believe it. They get discouraged when they see it.
Mm-hmm. Is the reason for that, Lily, that because it's so different than what people think of as the the common resume in the private sector, the way that it's structured, the way that the kind of information that's emphasized and all that kind of thing? Is it the idea of I've done all this work and now I almost have to start over from scratch?
To some extent, yes. But the federal resume doesn't differ that much from private sector, except you have to add a lot of ipsy-pipsy information to a federal resume, you know, such as your mother's blood type. No, yeah. Just kidding.
But the degree of detail is much greater than you would have.
It is much greater. But there is a myth that a federal resume has to be, you know, as long as Princess Di's wedding train in order to make it, and that's not so at all. I think another huge problem, and I hope my colleagues here can agree with me, is that there are a lot of smart people out there who've done great things and just don't know how to describe it to somebody who doesn't know them.
Mm-hmm. Derek, that's something that you've talked about with me off the air quite a bit, is that, and it's common in the private sector too, is people are in the habit of listing the things that they've done without demonstrating how that connects to how they're going to add value to an organization, whether they're applying for a job at a company or at a federal agency.
Exactly. I think what people don't realize is that the federal process right now is probably one of the most competitive job markets out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in terms of when I talk to HR managers, they're talking about for every every job announcement, we're talking about 400 to 600 to maybe thousands of applicants. And that may even be at a higher in a GS-13 level. If we look down at GS-5 or GS-7, it can be thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
So the competition is high. If you have just a federal resume or a resume that doesn't really go into success stories and it's just job descriptive language, what ends up happening is that you may hit a qualified list, but you're not going up to best qualified because you're not bringing out anything else that's going to make an HR manager or a selecting official pull you out of the pool of applicants to make you stand out. So, I mean, that's one thing that I think all of us focus in on is talking about achievements, success stories, and pulling that out, you know, between the CCAR method, the context, the challenge, the action results, or situation action results, and making sure that is really going into your federal resume and your KSAs. You've got to go into a lot more detail. And a lot of people do have that, you know, trouble. And I think all of us talk about that. They do have that trouble in terms of selling themselves mm-hmm. the right way.
All right, Derek, you get the 5 points for saying the phrase KSA first in our discussion today. I'll just throw this out there to any of you. The concept of getting rid of KSAs, is that a good idea or a bad idea for the people that you're dealing with who are trying to get in?
I think it's a great idea. I think KSAs that are rated and ranked by HR is very, very hard on both sides of the desk. I think it's very hard for HR to write the crediting plans, to do the scoring of multiple KSAs. I actually find it hard to believe they do it in this day and age, that mm-hmm. they actually read them and score them.
Well, especially if you're getting a couple hundred for a job opening.
Yes, I can't even fathom it. I honestly really can't. And then from the applicant's side, people can hardly believe that they have to write, you know, 5 or 6 or 4 narratives about their experiences. So the KSAs that are rated and ranked, I would be very pleased if they were eliminated from the first application that a person submits. But I will say, though, that the questionnaires, the assessment questionnaires that are alive and well now with applications, many times have an essay component to them. Those essays are not rated and ranked.
Mm-hmm.
They're simply placed there to prove your assessment level. I really don't think they're going to go away right away. They're not rated and ranked, so it's not as difficult as the KSAs, the old school style. So I don't mind those essays,
mm-hmm.
But they're shorter. You know, they're like a third of a page. One quick example that demonstrates your answer in the questionnaire. So there's two things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to add that even if the KSAs stay, most applicants have no idea of what makes a good KSA.
Mm-hmm.
They're just flailing around in the dark thinking that somebody else is doing a better job and stealing their future. So I think even if the KSAs do stay, which I think they probably will in some places, give the agency should give some examples of a winning KSA.
Mm-hmm. My guests in studio today are Lily Whiteman, who you just heard. She's author of How to Land a Top-Paying Federal Job. Before that, you heard Catherine Troutman, founder and president of The Resume Place, and Derek T. Dorch, president of Diversa Group and host of Fed Access here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, continuing our conversation about reforming the hiring, retention, recruitment process, and retirement. We'll cover it all this hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Are you accountable for improving efficiency and productivity? Then the 2010 DoD Service-Oriented Architecture Symposium is for you. Learn about SOA best practices and discipline from baseball's Ironman Cal Ripken, Union Pacific CIO Lyndon Tennyson, apprentice winner Kelly Perdue, DoD Assistant CIO David Wennergren, DoD Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer Beth McGrath, and many others. Be at the Crystal City Sheraton on April 21st and 22nd. Register at SOASymposium.com. That's SOASymposium.com.
Federal IT and security managers increasingly must rely on integrated tools and techniques designed to minimize damage and protect their most valuable information assets with dynamic defense architectures. This environment requires routine decision-making to balance introduction of new technology with ongoing mandates for information assurance. Register today for the Integrated Threat Detection and Defense webinar, April 28th at 2 p.m., and plan to join this detailed overview of several traditional protection and computing strategies presented by seasoned security experts who will help you update your thinking about content security and data privacy, malware detection and prevention attack, and intrusion prevention. Go to digitalgovernment.com/events/webinars and select Identity Threat and Detection Defense. That's digitalgovernment.com/events/webinars and select Identity Threat and Detection Defense to learn more and to register today. Presented by Cisco.
Hi, this is David and Nikki Nellis for Dishing It Out, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show.
Next Sunday, on April 11th, we'll have Sam Sir Lee, the acclaimed chef out of Toronto, who has opened up his Zen 10 here in D.C. We'll also be mixing it up with Leah Dedman. She's from Bravo. We'll be having good things next Sunday.
Can't wait to eat and drink all that. That's Dishing It Out next Sunday and every Sunday, live right here on 1500 and 820 a.m. at 11.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorbeck. Here's what we're working on for this afternoon's Daily Debrief. We continue our week-long series, HR Reinvented. This afternoon, Professor David Lewis, he offers insights about how government recruits, and he says feds can do better, and a remarkable initiative that seeks to tap the wisdom of crowds for government procurement. We'll talk to the team behind GSA's Better Buy Project. All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7 on the Daily Debrief with Chris Dorbeck and Amy Morris, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, talking about reforming the HR process in the federal government. It's part of our HR Reinvented series, and you can find out more about that at federalnewsradio.com. But we're looking at it today from the employees or potential employees perspective with three people who spend a lot of their time working with people who either want to get into the federal government or want to improve their lot in the federal government. Derek T. Dorch, president of Diversa Group, Catherine Troutman of the Resume Place, and Lily Whiteman, author of How to Land a Top-Paying Federal Job and Federal Career Coach, all in studio with me for the hour. Lily, you mentioned during the break that there are a lot of misconceptions, myths, whatever you want to refer to them as, about how people get in, how people can progress once they're in. You mentioned that there are a lot of people that you talk to that still think there's a civil service exam.
Right.
What are some of the things as you work with your clients as they come to you and say, I don't know if I'm ready to do this or I don't, whatever. And then it turns out, like the civil service exam, that that's not really part of it at all. Catherine, what happens when these people come in?
Today I was teaching a class, and one of the gentlemen in the class said, I just wish they didn't have to have a PhD for every government job.
Uh-huh.
That PhD, I wish they would take that off the announcement qualifications, because all they're doing is listing what education, what people hook onto the word PhD and think that you have to have that many jobs in government. You don't have to have a degree at all.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to read the tab qualifications in order to really understand it. And when people see the PhD, they just immediate turn off.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that they see on announcements that really gets them turned off quickly is it says about the security clearance. People think you have to have a clearance to get a job in the government. But what the language really says is you must be able to get a clearance.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say you have to have it walking in the door many times. So people think, well, I don't have a clearance, so I can't get a federal job. So those are two things that they see.
Well, those are great points. Let's step back and look at this for a minute, because a lot of conversation, a lot of toil has gone into the way the job descriptions are written over the last couple of years in particular. Director Springer paid a lot of attention to that when she was there. Director Barry has also focused on it quite a bit. This whole idea of coming up with templates for certain positions in the government that are pretty much where the responsibilities are the same from agency to agency and so on. But overall, when somebody logs on to USAjobs.gov, is the job description that's there, does it really fit with what the person winds up doing when they get to work?
You know, it's really complicated. I mean, if you look on USAJobs and you read through a job description, I think what Catherine was just talking about, as you look through the qualifications, I mean, sometimes you do have these very, very targeted KSAs that have this language in there that, you know, you must have been doing such and such, or you must have been working, you know something about a certain kind of agency process. Those sometimes will automatically eliminate people. But in that language about education as well, they'll have, you know, do you have a certain amount of experience, or does your experience level equivalent to a GS-13 or GS-11?
And how does anybody know what that means?
If you never knew what that means, or you don't know what a GS-13 is or GS-11 is, then you're automatically turned off. And I think that is kind of the process of changing the dynamics of how these job descriptions or these vacancy announcements are written, scaling them down. And yeah, I mean, maybe using the private sector model of what are the baseline qualifications? I mean, do you need a master's on this? Do you need this, or whatever the case is? And not using that convoluted language about having experience or this much education or a PhD in this or this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that you have to have a PhD. It's just saying that can be a qualifier.
Yeah.
That one line that says you must have 1 year specialized experience equal to a GS-7 level. And then people will say, well, I don't know what the GS-7 level experience is, so I don't know if I have it or not.
Yeah.
All the time they say that. If they would just say 1 year specialized experience equal to this position or slightly at a lower level, then regular people would understand.
Yeah.
And that kind of government speak really promotes the myth that that the federal government only promotes from inside, and that experienced older professionals will never get a government job. I run across that myth all the time.
Mike Causey says that the average age of new hires in the government is about 15 years older today than it was within the past decade or so. The average age, I think he said, is 37, 38, something like that, of people who are getting hired into the government. So that misconception that people have, the old model where you joined out of college and you worked for 35 years doesn't seem to exist anymore. Because there are some of those, but then for the average age to be in the 30s, it's got to balance out. There have to be people coming in later on in their careers, more experienced in their careers.
I think we're seeing it across the board. I mean, especially with this economy, we're seeing people, of course, the college students, and you talked about this, Leah, over the break about it's some great internship programs, great fellowship programs, and Leah may talk about it even more, mm-hmm. about how college students can get in, you know, whether it's paid or unpaid or volunteer internship programs, fellowships. Those get in through the door that way. But across the board, I've seen people who are everything from 30 to almost going on 70 who are trying to get into the federal government right now because, you know, people feel they want that stability.
And with the baby boom retirement surge, that will only increase that more older, experienced workers will be employed by mm-hmm. the government.
We only have about a minute left, but in this segment, when we come back, I want to talk about the biggest surprise, to me at least, in our federal HR survey that was available the past couple of weeks on federalnewsradio.com. We had a survey posted. Almost 400 high-level managers in the federal government took it, and big surprise number one for me. I'll tell you what that was when we come back and get our three experts to talk about it. Derek Dorch, Catherine Troutman, Lily Whiteman, all with me when we continue on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
I'm Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio. Strong March retail sales are helping to offset investor worries about a deepening financial crisis in Greece. The early Easter holiday helped the major American retail chains to a record 9.1% jump in same-store sales, beating Wall Street forecasts. The Dow's up 35 points, the Nasdaq higher by 4. The number of newly laid-off Americans filing first-time unemployment claims unexpectedly rose. The Labor Department says they jumped by 18,000 last week to 460,000. Economists were expecting a decrease. British Airways and Iberia inking a deal for an $8 billion merger to create the world's third-largest airline. The new company is being called International Airlines Group, but BA and Iberia brands will keep their own names. And Boeing says it delivered 108 commercial planes in the first quarter of this year. That's compared with 121 during the same period last year.
Hey, Kelly. So, who'd you hire to do your emails?
What? You know it's just me here.
Come on, I got your newsletter. Pretty fancy, photos, coupons. Come on, who is it?
Oh, no one, silly. I use Constant Contact.
Really?
With ConstantContact.com, it's so easy. They make me look like $1 million, and the emails really work.
Oh, yeah?
It got you in here today, didn't it?
Touché.
ConstantContact.com. Plans as low as $15 a month with a free 60-day trial.
It's Izod Week at Macy's, with 50% off all Izod men's polos, sports shirts, and more. All Izod short sleeve solid polos, $20. All Izod short sleeve wovens, $22. All Izod long sleeve wovens, $25. They're all on sale, so stock up now with 50% savings during Izod Week. Great prices every day. That's the magic of Macy's. Exclusions apply.
This gets called.
Isn't it funny how just when you think you've had the best time of your life, life makes you think differently? Remember your first kiss? How would you top that? And that summer before college. But then college came and poof, you almost forgot those times you would never forget. There was the romance that swept you off your feet and the wedding that took everyone's breath away. And the only thing more amazing than how beautiful your babies were was what wonderful people they turned out to be. Well, guess what? If you think life just couldn't get better, we've got news for you. It can. And that's the best reason for getting a mammogram. At Kaiser Permanente, more women do. And that's how we know regular screens are one sure way to make certain you live long and thrive. You want to know what happens next? Go for your next mammogram and stick around. Things are going to get a lot more interesting. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
To learn more, go to kp.org/mymammogram. Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down the walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
Introducing HalfPriceDC.com, your gateway to the area's best restaurants, stores, spas, and more, all at half price. This week, HalfPriceDC.com has half-price gift certificates to Reston National Golf Course, Northern Virginia's favorite classic golf course, Fontina Grill in Rockville, delightful Italian cuisine prepared fresh daily, and Extra Virgin in Shirlington with a beautiful new patio for the ultimate dining experience. See all the offers at HalfPriceDC.com.
It's 2005, and the FBI's Washington, D.C. office gets called about possible fraudulent Medicaid billing by a doctor.
The group that processes the Medicaid billing contacted the District of Columbia Office of Inspector General, and they had noticed some irregularities in the billing that was being performed by the doctor.
That's FBI Special Agent Tim Foster, who says the company processing the billing did an audit and patients were interviewed.
Based on the results of those interviews, then a search warrant was obtained for the doctor's office. More records were obtained, more interviews were conducted.
Foster says the doctor was involved in several schemes.
The predominant scheme was what we call ghost visits, where he was billing his patients that were legitimately his patients for services that either he never performed or stuff that he did perform were billed at a higher rate.
The doctor was convicted at trial, sentenced to more than 4 years in prison, and ordered to forfeit more than $133,000. I'm Neil Schiff of the FBI on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
For those dedicated to public service, meeting the growing expectations of the American people represents a challenge, but with Smart Project, People, and Performance Management, we can make the government more efficient. Hosts the Performance Institute, Federal News Radio, Federal Managers Association, GovLoop, IBM, and Young Government Leaders present the 11th Annual Government Performance Summit, May 10th through 12th at the Crystal City Hilton. Learn how leadership, measurement, and a motivated workforce drive results. Register today at governmentperformance.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, taking a look at the federal hiring process from the outside looking in. My guests this hour, Lily Whiteman, author of How to Land a Top-Paying Federal Job, Catherine Troutman, founder and president of The Resume Place, and Derek T. Dortch, president of Diversa Group and host of Fed Access right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. When is Fed Access on
every
the air?
Every Friday at 12 noon.
Exactly right. That's a great answer.
Right before your show.
Exactly. I get to enjoy it on my way in here getting all set up. I mentioned before the break, we had our personnel system survey called Building a Better Government. It was up on federalnewsradio.com for about 2 weeks. We got almost 400 people who responded to this survey. A tremendous amount of them, over 70% of them, had more than 20 years experience in government, and almost half of them were either, well, more than half of them were either 13s and higher or SES. So pretty representative cross-sampling of people at the upper levels of the government. The biggest surprise from this, when we reviewed the results of this yesterday with Paul Rowson from World at Work, was question number 11, the response to it. Question 11 was, does the federal hiring process take too long? Yes, 76%, sometimes 17.3%, not sure, 4.1%, and no, 2.6%. That's out of 392 responses. I was shocked that yes was only 76%. I expected this question to be seriously near 100% of people saying, yes, federal hiring process takes too long.
And I think, you know, what we talked about, I think it really depends on whose experience. I mean, some agencies, especially now, as we were talking about over the break, are being very aggressive with their hiring pattern. They're using the hiring flexibilities that OPM has provided, direct hire. They're using certain kind of authorities, whether it be veteran authorities or whatever. They're using specialized career fairs as like hiring events or certain things like that. So some agencies, if their leadership has directed that we need people in within 30, 45 or 60 days, they can use a number of hiring flexibilities. And so that 17% may be coming from that group who says, you know, our HR process is really on the ball.
It's rolling. Yeah.
And what I'm seeing with our clients at the Resume Place is that the turnaround from the time the closing date until the time they're contacted is faster now than it used to.
Mm-hmm.
And we had one occasion recently where a young woman was a legal assistant in a law firm and applied for paralegal with FBI. And the closing date was a certain date, and she was actually at work 3 weeks later.
That's completely 180 degrees opposite of what the stereotype is.
It was shocking.
And that's better than the private sector.
It's fabulous. Well, that's what I say when and I talk in my classes is that I see now that the HR people are trying to speed up a lot faster. We keep track of our success stories on our website.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if I had to do a guess on average of the time a person hears something about the closing date of today, they should hear something within 4 weeks,
mm-hmm.
whether they're referred, not referred, minimum quals, whatever their response will be. Normally, within around 4 weeks, and they are getting emails from HR, from OPM, and they're sending me some of the emails to try to understand them because they can't understand the emails from OPM. Right. They say to me, what does this mean? What do I do? And I have to read it carefully to figure it out myself.
Is it because it's in GovSpeak?
They just don't make their points well. You know, they'll say that you were found to be among the most qualified, but you were not referred. Please do not respond to this email.
And sometimes they are using government language. They are using certain kind of
acronyms. You can't understand that. It's such
an
important email. Uh-huh. You're so happy to get a response from OPM. You're so excited.
Yeah.
And you read it and you say, is this good? Is this really good? I just don't know what to do. So I wish they could just write a straight, nice email that would answer. You were referred for the supervisor. You were referred to the supervisor because you were found best qualified. But there's like only four emails to write.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can write it.
I've even received myself offers for jobs that I didn't know that I had gotten the job.
Uh-huh.
It took about three paragraphs in to say, you're hired in GovSpeak.
Yeah.
So that's another problem.
Now, let's go back to the example, Catherine, that you gave of the person who was on the job 3 weeks after the thing closed. Talk about the nuts and bolts there, because that's, I mean, if we could get to a place where even twice that amount of time, 6 weeks, people would just be apoplectic with joy, would become the norm rather than the exception. What's the nuts and bolts there? How did that work transactionally? And then let's see if we can figure out what happened there that can be applied to other places.
Well, it was a fast track application. Whenever you see in the announcement that it's a direct hire, then you know it's faster track than USA Jobs and the questionnaires and so forth. So it was a faster track, and she put her resume into USA Jobs. The resume matched. I mean, her background, legal assistant, law firm to paralegal justice or FBI, it's a match. So if the resume is good, if it shows the qualifications, if she's done her homework, she did, she came to us, we helped her. So there was a match, you know, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Grade level was right, salary match. I mean, just if anyone sees a match in an announcement in terms of all of that, they know, okay, do the best package possible. So she did that, then got the call for the interview. Closing date, call for interview was within 7 days. Interview was 7 days.
Yeah.
And then offer, like, the next day on the job, 7 days later. Just very, the fastest you can imagine. I can't even fathom three weeks on the job.
So why is it that, okay, so there were some exceptions to the rule in that, and you happen to have an applicant who was perfectly matched for the job.
Yes.
And I understand that doesn't happen in every single case. But you mentioned direct hire. Why, and maybe this is a dumb question coming from somebody who's not in the HR realm, but why can't that be applied across the board, or at least more universally than it is now? I'm sure there are some places where that's not appropriate, where you really need to maybe do a background check or something like that. But why couldn't that be a lot more widely available to hiring managers, Derek?
Well, you know, it is available. And if hiring managers...
So they're not using it.
They're not using it.
Is that what it is?
If they go to opm.gov and look under the HR practitioner and the hiring manager section that you can see on the front page, it talks about the hiring flexibilities, and you can look at direct hire authority, and you can kind of find out how to use these things. These tools have been available for quite some time. The end-to-end hiring initiative have been around for quite some time. OPM doesn't have the mandate power to say that this agency has to use. They can provide these guidelines, but they don't have the power to make people do this. So people in HR can do what they want to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a matter of educating those in HR sometimes, educating hiring managers. And sometimes I've seen hiring managers who don't know that all these things exist, that they can get fast-track hiring, you know, capabilities within their own HR office and move like that. Acceptive service agencies are different from competitive service agencies, and FBI is acceptive service. Acceptive service means that they have their own kind of special hiring authority. They don't have to necessarily use things under Title V of the Code of Federal Regulations. That's OPM. That's OPM guidelines. So they can hire. They can do certain things at a quicker speed. But all agencies honestly can do this. If they decide that we want to go ahead and do something quicker, they can. It's out there.
All right. We've talked a lot about the hiring process, and I want to talk after this break about the fixing the federal wandering eye. I'll explain what that means when we come back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Are you in the cloud? Whether you're managing your software on-premise, in the cloud, or a bit of both, Microsoft offers you unprecedented choice. The choice to manage the mission-critical computing resources your agency needs now with the vision, flexibility, and security features to meet many of the ever-evolving federal requirements. Cloud services for Microsoft. We're all in.
Are you in?
Learn more about Microsoft's cloud services. Visit Microsoft.com/govcloud. That's Microsoft.com/govcloud.
Back to programming in a minute, but first, listen to this. Since the New York Mint is releasing to the public classic U.S. gold coins, there's a number you can call for free historical information and a free DVD. But first, it says that during the Great Depression, people were greedy for gold coins because no one wanted to face economic turbulence without the security of gold. The government finally took them out of circulation, and a government meltdown was ordered. That's why most of us have never even seen a classic U.S. gold coin. But recently, a stash was discovered in Europe. Gleaming U.S. gold coins minted between 1866 and 1933, all uncirculated. It says the New York Mint is releasing them to the public on a first-come, first-served basis when you call, here it is, 1-800-500-8257. Wouldn't that be amazing to hold U.S. history? Okay, if you want that free historical information and the free collector's DVD, the number to call is 1-800-500-8257. 1-800-500-8257.
Newsmakers on the Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabeck and Amy Morris.
Democratic Congressman Jerry Connolly of Virginia.
Every federal agency needs to have a plan that in the event of an emergency that prevents people from getting to their place of work, well, how are you going to get the people's work done nonetheless? And telework is obviously just critical to the success of such continuity of operations planning. My amendment will require every federal agency to have such a plan and to include telework as part of that plan.
Hear the entire interview online. Federalnewsradio.com/daily debrief.
Hi, this is David Stecko from the Southeast Division Champion Washington Capitals, and you're listening to Federal News Radio, 1500 and 820 AM.
We're back now on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We are talking on In-Depth today with Derek Dorch, Catherine Troutman, and Lily Whiteman, three experts in the federal hiring process and career development process. And the reason that they're here today is because they are all people who other folks have paid and pay on an ongoing basis to help them either get a career in the federal government or develop the career they already have in the federal government. We spent a lot of our time so far talking about what OPM and the agencies can do from the viewpoint of the applicants, people who are coming into government for the first time. There are a tremendous amount of people who are in the federal government who want to build their careers, who want to either move up at the agency at which they work now, or they want to move to a different agency for better opportunities, more money, or whatever. What view should the government be taking about that? There is a perception, I think, that the hiring managers still, because the hiring managers have been around for longer than some of the employees, obviously, still are of kind of the old school mentality, which is, I want people that are going to be at my agency for 10, 15, 20 years. Is that the experience that you're having, or are the hiring managers getting it, that we have to think about developing our workforce and retaining the people we already have in a different way than we've done it in the past?
I think some hiring managers are getting it, but I don't think the majority are getting it. I mean, I hear from a lot of current feds who are very, very frustrated in their jobs and feel like they don't have the training opportunity, they don't have the education opportunity, they don't have the growth opportunities, or, as you know, special detail opportunities to really grow their career. So they end up being trapped in either the same series or the same kind of job for several years. And, you know, they do want to grow. They may have talked to several people about growth, but they're not really being provided the opportunity. I do think that, I mean, there are, you know, we got the Federal Executive Institute, Partnership for Public Service has training. There are a lot of different training opportunities. You got the graduate school. There's a lot of training opportunities out there, but I don't necessarily think that they're being utilized to their fullest. And I think also there does need to be a career track for every series, mm-hmm. whether you're a paralegal or whatever the case is. I mean, everybody should have an upward mobility career track or a transition track, and everybody should be given the opportunity. If you're a current Fed, you already have a clearance, you already have a lot of different things, you should be able to move to another agency and do another kind of job or get additional education to keep you federal.
Catherine, is there low-hanging fruit here? Is there something the agencies can be doing to develop the people they already have not doing now?
I did a very interesting a career training program for National Archives, and they found that their archives technicians were stuck at the GS7 level, and they wanted to open up the archive specialist series and promote more of those people up to that level. So I taught federal resume writing and KSAs and interview training to all the archives technicians to give them the opportunity to get promoted, because these people have been in their jobs 10 years and were not complaining because they didn't have development. Well, they needed to compete for these jobs. It was not just move up. They had to compete. So I came in and taught them so that they could write better packages. I've done it many times. I did it for immigration. Same thing, the immigration specialists. I traveled in different regions. They have really excellent skills, but they can't get promoted to higher grade levels, even though they should be a lead or a specialist. Well, they stay just the lower level because they can't write about what they do. They don't even know how valuable their services are to the immigrants and to their supervisors. So they need to be taught the value of what they can bring. Then they can write a good package and feel better and get promoted and stay. Keep those skills in that office. So that's something that managers can do.
Lily, you have a different perspective because you've actually done this a couple of times.
Right. I've worked for six agencies, and not because I'm a job hopper at all, but because that's what I had to do to move up. Many jobs don't have promotion potential. They have a ceiling. And you gotta go if you wanna move up. So I think that is low hanging fruit, is to make more jobs have higher ceilings.
Have you run across managers in your experience, either personal experience or with the clients that you've worked at, where a manager really does hold it against you when it appears that you want to move up and leave, and when that requires leaving an agency? Or do most people understand, hey, you know, this person's good and I'm only going to have them for a certain period of time?
It depends on the boss. You know, I've had both kinds of bosses, and you know, I advise most people not to tell their boss when they're job hunting, because it might be held against them, and they don't really usually need to tell them.
So. That's a mindset change, I guess, that would be required from the perspective of the manager, to say, listen, I really don't want this person to leave, but this person's so good and there's no place for him or her to go. I wonder how we change some of those minds, those mindsets, some of those worldviews.
You can't keep a happy employee if they're caged.
Right.
You know?
And part of it, Francis, is also if you do have a good employee, you provide more opportunities. I mean, you know, you provide maybe a special detail over to another agency. You provide maybe a chance for them to work on a special project internationally. I mean, you find out what, you know, that person really would like to do with their career, and then you provide them various opportunities. I talk to so many different federal workers who feel like, I'm making $100,000, but I'm being underutilized.
Yeah.
I get that so many times across different federal agencies, who are some agencies who are supposed to be doing some very, very critical work, but these people feel like, you know, I'm not being utilized by my manager.
Yeah.
Utilize these people, give them challenges, give them projects. I mean, we've got a lot of issues to solve within the federal government.
Yeah, there certainly is a lot of material.
Another constraint, too, is, you know, you should follow the money. If your agency is in a budget tight spot, which those kind of situations can come and go, then it's better to move to an organization that has more money, that will be more likely to promote you.
And it's not hard to follow that with as much coverage as the government's getting these days.
Exactly.
It's pretty easy to tell where budgets are growing and where they're not.
And it's also wise to work as much with the front offices and the muckety-mucks as you can, because you can do the same quality of work in a backwater office as a frontwater office, but you're not going to get the same recognition, unfortunately.
My expert panel on HR issues in the federal government includes Lily Whiteman, who you just heard there, Catherine Troutman, founder and president of The Resume Place, and Derek T. Dortch, president of Diversa Group and host of Fed Access here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We will wrap up our conversation in a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose. Back. Coming right back.
One little fish oil pill. You know, this powerful little pill is great for your heart, that it's great for your joints. It even has powerful benefits for your skin and brain function. But other fish oils of today are sadly incomplete because they don't contain vitamin D that can promote mood, energy, and bone health. Until now. Introducing the risk-free trial of Omega Berry with vitamin D and acai from Purity Products, our most powerful fish oil formula ever. The only thing our advanced Omega Berry fish oil is missing is the price. Because right now, we're offering anyone a full-size bottle of fish oil as part of a nationwide risk-free trial. Plus, the best-kept secrets to healthy aging, a free book. Just call 1-800-700-1605.
To request yours, you can't go to stores. The only way to get your free trial and free book is to go to the phone. The number is 1-800-700-1605. Call now for your free trial. That's 1-800-700-1605.
Let's talk about Google Wave. If somebody has a blog and they would like to create a wiki within their blog, they don't have to write the code. They create a wave, they just drag that wave into their blog, and now their blog is empowered with a wiki. And they have all of that real-time translation capacity within their blog.
Stay up to date with technology. It's Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What is the Global Partnership Initiative? How is the U.S. Department of State leveraging private-public partnerships to achieve foreign policy goals? Listen next week, as these questions and more will be explored with Ambassador Elizabeth Frawley Bagley, Special Representative, Global Partnership Initiative at the U.S. Department of State, next week. Join host Michael Keegan next week on the Business of Government Hour.
We need to explore that cave, Sergeant.
Sir, the opening's too small. I can't get a man in there, sir.
I'll go.
Who are you?
I'm Sug V, the robot for the infantry, sir.
A robot for infantry soldiers?
Yes, sir. I'm small, light, and versatile. A tool that can protect every squad, especially when dealing with the tough conditions in Afghanistan.
Well, what are you waiting for? Get in there, Sug V.
Yes, sir.
For more information, visit iRobot.com. Protecting troops. Saving lives. Making a difference. iRobot.
Be sure to mark April 29th on your calendar and attend the Excellence.gov Awards luncheon at the JW Marriott Hotel in Washington. These awards will recognize the game changers, those federal programs and their managers who have achieved exceptional results in managing IT in support of the government's mission and serving citizens. On April 29th, the winners will join the over 150 programs that have received the Excellence.gov Award since 2002. For more information, go to actgov.org/excellence.gov2010.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My panel of experts on the federal HR process, part of our HR Reinvented series, which you can find out more about on federalnewsradio.com. To wrap up a wish list, what do you, two things, each of you will start to my right with Lily Whiteman. Two things that could be changed immediately in the HR process, what would they be?
One, to tell applicants how the system works and how their applications will be evaluated. That's really, I talk about that in my book, but it's not on USA Jobs or anywhere else, and you can't really work the system if you don't know how the system works.
Mm-hmm.
Number two would be to give hiring managers a legal way to hire from within, to pre-select without advertising a pre-selected job to the entire world and making people apply for a job that they're never going to get.
Okay. Catherine Troutman, two things, your wish list.
Well, my favorite wish list is that I wish that USA Jobs had an 800 number for customer services. That would be wonderful for applicants. The other is that I wish that with the questionnaires, there would be a maximum limit of 20 questions on any questionnaire.
How many are there usually? What's the average?
Average could be anywhere from 12 to 120.
120 questions?
That's right.
Lord have mercy. Derek, wish list?
Oh, it's so massive, but I'm going to hit two. The complicated language, change that on the job descriptions. Just make it, you know, what you're looking for, what are the qualifications that you want. Very, very plain, simple language. If you need to use the private sector as a model, do so.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is, I mean, I believe in career fairs, and I think career fairs are great, but I think agencies, one, need to use career fairs more, but when they do use career fairs, send people who are going to honestly collect resumes, you know, possibly do some hiring, you know, or at least a selection of resumes. Actually talk to the people. Don't just send them to the website. Don't have a person standing in line for 2 to 3 hours and do them a disservice of saying, go to the website and apply online.
Mm-hmm.
Actually look at the resume and talk to people, and maybe you can find some good candidates that way.
Uh-huh. Derek T. Dortch, host of Fed Access Friday mornings, Fridays at noon, I guess it's not really morning or afternoon,
right
on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, president of Diversa Group. Where Where do we find the Diversa Group online?
DiversaGroup.com.
That's pretty easy.
Yes, that's it. DiversaGroup.com. You can also catch me on the Washington Post every couple weeks and go to the Washington Post on the job section, go to experts, and you'll see me from there.
All right. Catherine Troutman, founder and president of The Resume Place. Your latest book is which one?
Second edition is 10 Steps to a Federal Job. And then the first book is a Federal Resume Guidebook. Uh-huh. And they have samples of the best writer write federal resumes. I teach a one-hour free class on my website, a webinar every week where I answer questions and I do the job for USA Jobs. I am their 800 number right now. And I would like USA Jobs to take over that job.
Yeah.
And that's why I said it.
So what's your website?
Website is resume-place.com.
Okay.
I teach a one-day class also about every 2 weeks.
Okay. We'll get all the websites and everything collected at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. Lily Whiteman, author of How to Land a Top-Paying Federal Job. Your website is?
IGotTheJob.net, and lots of free advice on my Federal Times column at federaltimes.com.